The Troubadour Tapes.
I had a goose and the goose pleased me.
Woman's only human.
One less set of footsteps on your floor.
Never saw my hometown till I stayed away too long.
Part and all.
I'm a happy boy.
The Troubadour Tapes.
Hi, welcome to the San Diego Troubadour Tapes podcast. What we do here is pretty simple. We invite both the subject and the writer of one of the San Diego Troubadour's articles to conduct their interview here in Berkeley Sound Studio. My name's Jeff Berkeley. Well, this month is our Valentine's Day edition, and so we like to feature a couple of San Diego musicians. And so this week we're going to feature Marcia Forman. She's a renowned San Diego saxophonist. And Floyd Fronius, equally renowned San Diego violinist. Well, for me, as a musician in San Diego, I found the story really interesting because both of their stories are stories of musicians in San Diego, and they really parallel the musical history of this town over the last 30 years, and also the way they met at this very iconic San Diego location. What we'd like to do is start out by getting a little bit of background on each of them separately.
And my dad had a cold storage. And
that's Marcia Forman. She's talking about how she grew up.
And
now, what's a cold storage?
Oh, my mistake. Of course, that's this month's distinguished interviewer and journalist, Paul Hormick.
A cold storage is a place where, like, he had apples in the winter time, and in the summertime he was a pickle packer. My dad
was a pickle packer.
Yeah,
very exciting.
Give me some context here.
Broker for farmers in the area.
Uh huh.
And they all brought their pickles and fruits and vegetables to him, and he stored them. And then he sent them to Borden's and
Michigan. Is big time. This is big time.
Yeah, there
pickles.
Pickles, okay. And apples.
And so when you were, it's a saxophone, right?
I started in fourth grade. I went in elementary school. I started playing alto saxophone. My sister Sue was a clarinet player.
Now, how old was Sue at the time?
Sue was 4 years older than me.
Okay.
Still is 4 years older than me. And Judy played the flute and the piano. And
let's back up now.
Sue.
So you mentioned Sue and Judy. Now you have that. Those are your two sisters?
I have two sisters, Sue and Judy, and I have a brother.
And they're all older?
All older. I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest.
I am the youngest, yes.
Okay. So there's Judy.
Judy.
And
Steve. And Sue, and then me.
Uh-huh.
And
so it was Sue that said to you, you ought to play the saxophone.
Yes. She played the clarinet. She wanted to double on the saxophone.
For you to play together.
Yeah, or just she wanted to learn how to play the saxophone also. And of course, I said, this is mine, that's yours, basically when I got it. So that's when I started playing the saxophone in elementary school.
And did you just take to it, or was this, you said, oh my gosh, I want to do this for the rest of my life, or?
I guess so.
Okay.
I guess so, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And you started with the orchestra?
Yes, I started, I was in the band, elementary band, and then we moved to outside of Rochester to Webster, New York.
Webster, New York.
Which, my dad bought a drugstore there with my uncle. And I joined the Webster Village Band. The Webster Village Band from 7th till 12th grade. I played first alto. There I was. And with Mr. Maruzak. Mr. Maruzak was my high school teacher, my junior high. And he said, He was just starting this band and he wanted me to be part of it. It was all ages.
So you're pretty busy with that.
And with
the saxophone, you were in the marching band all that.
Yes.
Now, did you choose music? Now, you went off to college. Did you choose that as a major? Or
I wanted to. I wanted to, but I went to State University of New York in Fredonia, and that was outside of Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
And there was one sax that's very well known for their jazz program, jazz music.
Okay.
And there was one space for a saxophone, and so I went into sociology. I was a sociology major, and I lasted there a couple years.
Uh-huh.
Although I was in the all-college band. I did play lead alto in that band.
Okay.
That's pretty fun.
Cool. Yeah. And then?
Then My mom is, she really enjoys music. She went to all of our concerts. She's one of our main fans, all four of us. But she decided I needed to have a job to fall back on. So I went, after Fredonia, I went to Boston, Massachusetts. Uh-huh. And I went to secretary school. I was for a year, I went to a one-year program. I went to Catherine Gibbs Secretary School. There I was, and I was very close to Berklee School of Music, and I was taking saxophone lessons from a teacher, a retired teacher, I think. I can't remember his name.
Okay. From the Berklee faculty.
Yes.
Okay.
While I was at
Katie
Gibbs. So
you've had this, even though it was maybe not your main focus, but you've always continued this.
Yes.
This thing with the music. And it's always been the saxophone.
Always saxophone.
Okay.
Alto.
So now, how did you wind up out here? Was it the secretarial school that sent you out here?
No. I was, as a matter of fact, I was, after Katie Gibbs, I was working as a receptionist for this company called Photographic Sciences Corporation, and they used to make barcodes. They were like the developers of barcodes. And I was the receptionist for them. And
oh, cool.
That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then Xerox picked me up for a year, and I was a buyer's aide. I was for 21 buyers, you know, and for castings and hardware. This is Marcia speaking here.
No, it's a day job, though, but you're still playing. Are you still playing music some?
Yeah, I'm playing
bands
sax,
orchestras?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a little more into jazz there, trying to do that. And then my sister Judy, called me up from San Diego, and she said, Marcia, I need some help at the Big Kitchen restaurant. She was just opening it. It was 1980. And she opened it June 18th of 1980. And I came out here to check it out 4th of July.
Uh-huh.
And I moved out here. I started washing dishes probably November 2nd, 1980. It's hard to forget that date. Yes. And that's how I got out to San Diego. Basically.
Okay, and then you're involved with music here pretty much right after that.
Right, I was thinking about that. I realized that I had gone to see Molly Stone of Stone's Throw. She was at the Sheraton, I think, and I was talking to her, and I said, Molly, who's your teacher? I want to start taking lessons. And she turned me on to this gentleman, Howard Carroll. Howard Carroll used to compose these songs, you know, rearrange for big bands in the 40s.
Oh, gosh.
He's an amazing instructor. You know, he taught me theory, and he taught me clarinet. I was starting to play clarinet then and a little flute and kept on the sax. Yes.
Now you play the tenor?
Alto.
You play alto.
Okay. I do have a tenor and
you
soprano.
You do have a tenor. Do you play that at all?
I have. Okay. Yes, I do.
Once in a while.
There's Floyd chiming in.
Jazz bands and stuff.
Now, if there's anything you're known for, it's you have this wonderful silky sound. And I was just curious that how did you, where's your sound come from? Where's your influence or?
I think my, when I came out here, I started at City College Jazz Band with Dave Greeno. And that was 1980. And about 1984, there was a school, it was called the Jazz School. And these two gentlemen from Berklee School of Music from Boston came out here. I guess they got tired of the winters, I understand. And they came out here and they started the school, and I just jumped in. I did harmony, composition, ear training. It was just fascinating for me. 8 hours a day I practiced, and I took from this gentleman, his name was Paul Sunfor. Paul Sunfor happens to be Charles McPherson's brother-in-law, relatively speaking. And so he just took me under his wing, and he just taught me so much. I think for a year and a half.
Did he work with you on your sound?
On my sound. I listened to him.
Okay, so that's where you get your sound
from. Yes, he plays like Old Glow. He does a lot of shows.
As far as, say, listening to records of saxophonists
Or
whatever?
Grover Washington Jr. and Paul Desmond.
Yes, I can hear that in your playing.
Oh,
yeah, I'm glad you said that. I thought you'd gotten a lot of.
I do play Take Five, of course. And who else? I wrote it down. And Paul Desmond and David Sanborn. I got to meet him a couple.
You got to meet David Sanborn?
A couple months ago at an anthology.
A few weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah, there he was. You know, I looked at Floyd. I said, what do I say? He's been my hero for how many years? And Floyd just took it over. He said, she's talked about you for 22 years that I've known you. And, you know, wow, that was a trip. I gave him my CD, by the way. There he was. And so David Sanborn and Hollis Gentry. I took lessons from Hollis Gentry. I took lessons from John Rekovics, who's a monster player. Mm-hmm. I've wanted to take from Joe Murillo and Charles McPherson. I think in my future I would like to take from them.
Oh, you're playing with Joe Murillo now.
I am.
Is this a regular thing you're playing with Joe?
I would like to make it a regular thing. We
Once
played
in a while.
At Rebecca's a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, there's a story behind that. At the Big Kitchen, I was waitressing. I was running all around, and Judy came out. My dad was sitting out on the front bench with this gentleman. She said, "Marcia, you got to come out here." So I went out, and it was Joe Murillo, and he was schmoozing with my dad. He was there, and Joe Murillo's from Niagara Falls, and my dad's from Albion, which is close between Rochester and Buffalo. So they had a lot in common, and they were just talking. And my dad said, "You got to play with this guy." So, okay, Dad.
So she did.
Yeah,
so we did. It was great.
Okay, now, if you listen real close, you'll hear Liz Abbott, and she's the editor-in-chief of the San Diego Troubadour magazine, and she had a question.
With the old people's homes.
Okay. Yes. I work for continuing education. I'm an adjunct professor. I teach musical experiences to people at the Alzheimer's Center and at Convalescent Hospital. And they're
How'd you get involved with that?
Through our friend Gary Thompson. Gary's Dixieland, amazing. Trombonist and guitarist, amazing musician.
Great jazz guitarist, yeah.
But he said, he knows a lot of musicians, and he says, "Marcia, you're the one." He says, "I think I'd like you to play at this gig,"
And
I've been there almost 2 years, about 2 years in April. And I'm playing these tunes that bring back memories for these folks, Satin Doll and It Had to Be You. That's, I always start with that song and don't get around much anymore. I shouldn't do it, but I do it. And and different, and I play for these folks, and like we do, name that tune, and they help me out. We go alphabetically and, you know, different tunes. And
is things. This like once a week that you do
once,
this?
I'm at the Alzheimer's Center. It's going to be 3 days a week now.
Oh, God.
Coming next semester, and one day at the convalescent hospital.
And so now what's the setting for this? Is this just a common room with
the
piano?
It's a daycare with the piano.
Yeah.
So I play piano and I play saxophone and I sing a little. Yes, it's true.
Is there any structure to this, or do you just play songs?
What else do I do? We do alphabet games and we just do, we do movement, and I play marches, like 76 trombones, and they're marching and stuff, and I just play a lot of Broadway tunes, and yes. Is there structure? That's a good question.
It's just amazing how powerful music can be for, you know, these folks with Alzheimer's. It's been shown that playing music like this really triggers memories that wouldn't be triggered otherwise and helps them come back.
Now, is there any particular thing, I mean, any particular situation that you can remember that really struck you, that where somebody remembered the song?
Kansas City. My friend Calvin. Calvin Love, he was born in Kansas City. And every time I played Kansas City, you know, he was pretty out of it most of the time. He just sat there. And sometimes he's sleeping. And I started playing Kansas City, and he got up and danced. He was up dancing, and it was just so special, so rewarding. It's like, that's it for me. You know?
Great.
And there's Millie, who sings Heart of My Heart, and every 5 minutes she belts it out. You know, it's that's good, Millie, that's good. And I have a lot of him. Don, who likes Hoagie Carmichael, and he knew him in Denver.
Gosh,
he knew the Rat Pack. He knew them in, and he went to the Sands and he met all those guys. So.
Interesting, all the stories that come back to you when you're amongst these people.
Yeah, and John, I walked into the convalescent hospital one day, and we were talking. You know, he said, "I play tenor saxophone." I said, "No kidding." And he went to the jazz school with me.
This was John Young, who is a famous saxophone player.
Wow.
Yeah, yes. He was in a big band in the 40s. And he tells me all these stories, and here we are. Our paths crossed again. And
now you're playing for him.
I'm playing for him. Oh, it's great.
Wow.
He said, "Play Misty for me." My mother does too. That's my mother's favorite song. My dad likes Stardust.
Now, this is getting a little bit off music here, but you've been with your sister practically since the inception of The Big Kitchen.
The inception of me.
And, that's such a landmark in San Diego.
Yes.
And it has such a history and all. And if you could share just maybe one of the more memorable stories of the Big Kitchen, or
wow, I've been there. I'm still there. I'm there
awesome
Sunday mornings. I'm still there. Memorable stories of the Big Kitchen. I think my friend Bob was a dishwasher there. Bob knew. And Whoopi, by the way, Whoopi was also a dishwasher.
Whoopi Goldberg worked there.
She was a dishwasher. I was a prep cook. Judy was the waitress. And Andre was the cook.
That was the very beginning.
That was, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we just, she told us stories and stuff. And I told her stories. We had a good rapport going. It's pretty fun.
Cool.
Yeah, Whoopi.
Well, let's bring Floyd up to date here, because we've gotten a bit of your story here. And so, was it always the violin with you?
It was always the violin. I actually had a fairly similar story to what Marcia went through. I was back east as well, I started in West El Cajon and moved to East El Cajon.
Oh, you later really in my childhood. Moved far. Yeah, you've really come a long way.
But I started.
You tell people you're from back east as well.
Back east as well.
Yeah.
I have a brother, Doug.
Uh huh. How older?
He's about a year and a half older. Almost 2 years older. He took up the trumpet. I don't know where that came from. Our family didn't have a lot of musical background.
Uh-huh.
But he took up the trumpet, started playing that in around fourth grade. And somewhere along the line, I discovered the violin. And I started telling my parents I wanted to play the violin. And they finally broke down and gave me one, probably towards the end of third grade. But back then, all the schools, the elementary through high school, had excellent music programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I started in elementary school, playing in the school orchestra, went on through junior high and high, playing the violin throughout. I also started playing, I decided I wanted to play in band as well. I took up the French horn. Played in concert band.
So you're pretty busy with music.
Took up the baritone horn to play in marching band. So throughout to the end of high school, I was pretty serious at playing the violin. I was taking private lessons much of that time.
So were you just in love with music?
I'd consider myself pretty shy and kind of reserved sort of person, had a hard time relating to people in general, kind of in my shell. And music was something that I could do, that I could enjoy, that I could do well and participate with the community that was playing music. So it was a very good thing that I had and I did really enjoy it.
And so after school, you kept playing, or?
I got out of high school. I kind of took a break from music for a bit. I would occasionally play the violin. I had other interests going on. I don't know if you want to get into the other interests in my life, but.
No, let's, mentioned that the other day, and I think that's quite interesting. You were among the forefront of the hang gliding movement.
I was. Myself and my father and my brother all started hang gliding in the early 70s, and we were, part of the movement in San Diego. My family formed one of the first hang gliding organizations, clubs in the world, basically.
Was that just a San Diego club like a worldwide club?
It was a San Diego club.
Uh-huh.
And I have remained part of hang gliding and lightweight soaring throughout my life. It's almost 40 years now that I've been a pilot and interested in it.
In your late teens, early 20s, though, that really took
precedence. I started flying when I was 15.
Uh-huh.
I got out of high school and basically lived and breathed hang gliding for a few years there and traveled a lot and flew every day that I could. And, occasionally played the violin. I would bring the violin along on trips and play around the campfire and mm-hmm. get to go. I was working at a hang glider factory for a while, and after work, we'd get together and play music and have a great time, but it wasn't really the big focus of my life.
Mm-hmm. So how was it that you
got back to
saying, oh, this would be a fun to start doing again? Or
well, there were early signs. When I was still in high school, I was in a local orchestra, the Civic Youth Orchestra. There were a couple other local violinists that happened to be part of that. One was Chris Vitus,
mm-hmm.
the other was Yale Strom. They were both in orchestra with me.
Two big name violinists here in San Diego.
And I remember one of the first times that I really flashed on the idea of doing something other than classical music on the violin. I was in the hallway at the Civic Youth Orchestra and after a rehearsal, and there was Chris jamming away on this instrument and doing this amazing improvisation, and that really stuck with me.
And you said, gosh, I can do that? Or that seems really neat?
It was pretty amazing. I didn't really take off in that direction. I think probably 1978, early 79, I remember going into a local restaurant, and there happened to be, a duo or trio musicians playing. It was Cornucopia Restaurant, a vegetarian restaurant on Washington Street, San Diego. And mm-hmm. there were these musicians playing, and I flashed on that and saying, wow, to have a group like that playing in a restaurant, playing in front of people doing music that was, you know, original music. I just thought that was the greatest thing. And I think that's where the seed really took root.
Mm-hmm.
Soon after that, I had moved to kind of the general area where I still live. I was living in North Park,
mm-hmm.
North Park. It all started, things seemed to revolve around women. I was living with this woman. It wasn't working out very well. Her brother was a fellow named Mike Parker, which she told me to look up this person. He was a guitar player. I thought that we'd get along very well, and he was looking for a roommate. So I moved in with Mike, and he was part of a band called Featherwood.
Mm-hmm.
He, Mike, and Gene on mandolin and Tim on bass, they were writing original music and playing, you know, kind of original music and covers, and I joined the band. I was with them for a year. Every day.
So this is like your first band. Like,
this is my first band,
cool.
1979 to 1980.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly I was in a band. We were out, our first regular gig was the One Night Stand out in Ocean Beach. And we progressed to some nicer clubs in town and did some concerts and
now, were you
did
tell,
a little touring.
I think I heard you mention, though, also that about this time you were going to Balboa Park.
Well, this is at kind of the end of my tenure with Featherwood.
Uh-huh.
I started going to Balboa Park. Early 80s in the park was a really interesting music scene. People out there busking. You'd go out, get a permit to play, and you could show up on a Saturday or Sunday, and there might be 7 or 8 or 9 different groups, solos, duos, mm-hmm. trios, people playing interesting music. And I would show up and just wander around and say, hey, could I sit in and play a few tunes? I'd play with this person, wander over to another person, play with them.
Just any sort of thing, swing?
All these different styles,
folk
a lot of original music.
Were you learning at the time, or was that helping you get all these different styles?
Oh, absolutely. Interesting, one of the first people that I met and played with out there was a Troubadour alumni, Jim Earp. He was one of the buskers in the park, and
mm-hmm.
we enjoyed playing together. Soon after that, I met David Kendall and Jeff Pekarek. They had a group called the Jackstraws.
Now, were you in on the... They had already formed the Jackstraws.
They had formed the Jackstraws probably, you know, very late 70s. And they were, right then, that was one of their main gigs, was playing in the park. And I joined them at that point, and was the start of a part of, you know, I met them, and soon after that, met this whole group of people that are with me to this day. Not long after that, part of that group formed a band called Raggle Taggle, which is still playing actively to this day.
And are you playing with them still?
I am.
So
and
that band's been playing then. You've been playing with them for 30 years.
30 years.
So...
But it was an amazing time, the early 80s. All the different ideas, is just intensely creative. All the different bands that we put together playing. David and Jeff are really interested in British Isles folk music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I played with Featherwood and played some Jethro Tull tunes, played other tunes that kind of spoke to some of these folk traditions from the British Isles.
Mm-hmm.
And then David and Jeff were doing the real thing. They were doing these tunes that really spoke of the kind of the druidic, the real foundations to a lot of the mysteries and music that came out of the British Isles.
So Raggle Taggle has lasted longer than, you know, bands break up. Mm-hmm. But Raggle Taggle's been, you know, around forever. Why is that band so long living, do you think?
Well, the foundation of Raggle Taggle is Mike and Gene Stewart. Mike Stewart is an amazing band leader that has really brought that. He's like a center that people come to, and an amazing personality. But it's really, you know, that group started as a group of friends. Friends and artists and people that wanted to create together. And it has lasted to this day. And it's, you know, people have come and gone, and there's certainly been lots of drama over the years, and that could have kind of blown to smithereens many times. But
and how has the in the way you look at it, how has the band developed over the years, or has it pretty much maintained kind of the same? Or
well, the many things have been tried over the years.
Mm-hmm. Such as
well, all the different styles of music that Raggle Taggle has played. You know, we've done a lot of Irish music. The last few years, we've had some great Irish shows that we've done. We've had regular gigs at clubs like Dublin Square, and where we have a five-piece band and a couple professional-level Irish dancers that get up every few songs and just kind of take the house down doing Irish dancing with the band. The music is very important. But for Raggle Taggle, the theatrical aspects of it have always been very much in the mix.
Right.
You know, we've done a lot of shows, kind of theme shows, you know, big Renaissance banquets where there's a lot of shtick involved. You know, a lot of theatrics that are.
And do you enjoy that?
I do enjoy that.
Okay. It's,
you know, our job as musicians is to give something to the audience. You know, music is a major part of it, but it's not the only part of what we're trying to do.
And then Paul wanted to know a little bit about the new band that Floyd's playing in.
About 11 years ago, I made a conscious decision to slow down on my flying and get more serious about my music. And so since then, I've had what I think is a really interesting progression of the people that I've played with, things I've been involved with, that have led me to where I am now with 3 Degrees. In 1999, I joined the Fern Street Circus. I'd been involved with the circus pretty much since its inception. John Hyken, the circus was, really came to being around the counter at the Big Kitchen. And I was happily involved, you know, occasionally making circus sets and props and, you know, different bits of hardware over the years. And I talked to John about being involved, but I was, you know, more involved in flying in the summertime and couldn't really afford the time. But about then, he invited me in, and for the next 4 years, I was in the circus band. It was very interesting music. It was all original material written by Miriam Cutler, who is formerly from Oingo Boingo, and really interesting string and horn parts and pretty exciting music. So for the next few years, I played with them. Met a number of interesting people. Dave Page was involved in that, the drummer.
Well, he's been with the Marcia Foreman band.
He is. Well, that's one thing that led to that.
Yes.
Dave Page. So I played with the circus until John left it, moved on to greener pastures, and they decided to cut back on the music. So we went separate ways.
Does it still exist?
It absolutely still exists, and it's a great organization. They do great things for kids. They have a kids program where they bring kids up in circus arts, and they put on these big productions every summer.
Yeah, it's a marvelous
and
program.
It's a great thing.
They just had like right there in South Park, right there.
It's Belleville Park. Oh,
no. Well, the show started in South Park at the what's now the dog park, Grape Street Park,
right. Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to President's Way and have been there for many years.
Yeah.
Plus, they do other shows around the town and do some traveling.
They were doing just CD with Dave playing drums
lately. Yeah, Dave's still involved.
Yeah.
But anyway, Dave introduced me to. Lady named Lauren Morris had a band called Celticana, a Celtic fusion band.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I joined them.
Around what time was this?
2002, 2003. We did Celtic fusion and put out a couple excellent CDs and did a little touring and lots of local performance.
So your development of this sound has been going on for years.
Yeah, it's that same time, Dave also introduced me to his nephew, Gregory Page.
Okay.
And I started playing with Gregory from time to time. And after I left Celticana in 2003, I got to play with Gregory quite a bit, doing house concerts and doing some recording with him and with other folk.
And that's sort of more of a pop music
that's
sort of thing? Or
more original. Yeah. Singer-songwriter, of various styles, jazz and original folk music. Played with him and Tom Brosseau, the American songwriters, Brousseau.
So that
led me to my next band, which was with Roy Ruiz Clayton. I was on his CD that he did in 2004. And he formed a trio with him and myself and Teresa Rochelle Ross. He played flutes and drums and was a second vocalist.
So it was flute, violin, and drums?
Flute, violins, and Roy on the guitar.
On the guitar.
And it was a lovely trio that we played a lot of coffee house gigs and other gigs in town.
And what was that called?
Well, Roy Ruiz Clayton, who went by his name. So that was another, playing with another very interesting songwriter and very original material.
Kind of similar with, like, working with Gregory Page.
Yeah, very similar.
Yes.
But his another person's take on it, it's
right.
more of my education.
Right. So
the next band that I played with regularly was my friend Bill Corwin, who I had known actually since the late 70s. He was actually a fan of Featherwoods and a fan of many bands over the years. He used to be a fixture in many musical locations. And he always said to me, someday I'm going to form a band. And about this time, he retired from his position making videos for the San Diego school system, which he did for many years. And formed a band, Billy Lee and the Swamp Critters, Cajun Zydeco and original material.
Now, had you ever played that before?
Not really. Maybe, very occasionally with Raggle Taggle, we would play a kind of a Zydeco-sounding tune.
So you just kind of jump into these things.
But I jumped into that and really enjoyed my tenure with Bill and learned some of these styles.
What I'm hearing, though, is that you just kind of, from the whole thing with Balboa Park, Gregory Page, Ray Ruiz, whatever, is that you just start playing.
Well, I've always been very interested in creativity and improvisation and, taking what's given to me and using whatever tools I have to paint a picture with it. And it's really been lovely over the years to be able to play all these different styles and then take all these different colors that I've learned from, say, Irish music and swing and jazz and zydeco and the blues, and mix them together and come up with this painting that I'm trying to do.
So back to my original question. So is when I hear you play with 3 degrees, is that what I'm hearing? Just this a
Absolutely.
Lot of influence from everything?
Absolutely.
Okay, so now you kind of get a feel for who these two people are, kind of sort of where they come from, and now we're going to get to the part about where and how they come together.
Now, for the two of you, how was it that you met?
Should I take that, or should you? Take
I mean, well, I think you should both interrupt each other,
okay.
and keep saying that the other one has a story wrong.
Okay.
So,
well, she was a waitress at the Big Kitchen.
You were at the Big,
yes,
and so
I was.
And
19,
I goes back to the
1980s.
Early
80s. 1980. I lived in Golden Hill, South Park area.
Okay.
Me too. We both did.
We both lived there.
Yeah.
And I started going to the restaurant probably about the time, probably before you showed up.
Yes.
Probably about the time that Judy, actually it was before, it was early 1980. It was before Judy had the restaurant. I started going to it.
Uh-huh.
And, well, Marcia showed up. And so I met her over the counter. And we would have occasional conversations. We discovered that we each played music. So we had that in common.
Was there anything saying like, that may be the one for me?
He had a couple girlfriends.
Well,
before
we both had significant others at that point for the next 2 years. So, you know, we kind of had this conversation saying, oh, hey, we ought to get together sometime and play music. Oh, yeah, someday. Someday we did. And we did it for 6 years.
Oh, gosh.
Finally, it was 1986.
January 17th.
January 17th. Next week is my birthday.
His birthday.
But my birthday had a party. I said, Marcia, come to the party. We're going to have a big jam session. We're going to have a great time. I happen to be living at the Drowsy House. I didn't say anything about Drowsy Maggie's. I lived in a house right behind Drowsy's, which was all musicians and interesting folk, and it was the place to be right then.
Right.
So I invited Marcia to the house, and we had a great jam session and
playing music. And there we were.
But she does say that she sat on the bed next to me and she got warm.
So that's the good news.
Oh, okay.
That's the good news.
We knew something. There was some spark that happened at that point.
Yeah, so then we just started playing music together then, more and more.
Now, you both have very schooled backgrounds, but it seems like you've had more, say, like the jazz influence, Marcia.
Mm-hmm, right.
And maybe you with more folk or pop or rock or whatever. And so playing in the Marcia Foreman band.
We're doing like swing music,
or whatever.
Swing jazz, yeah.
Are there things that you're learning from each other musically or influencing each other? Wow, would you?
I think we're really learning how to listen. You know, playing in an ensemble is all about being aware of everyone else in the group and listening and not stepping on each other, but trying to add to the whole. So that's, you know, Marcia.
Blending.
Marcia has done a lot of solo work, and she had before that,
mm-hmm.
just kind of out of desperation, wanting to play.
I'd just go out and just play jazz standards, like for art openings and parties and dinner parties and stuff. There
but,
I am, put me in a corner.
It's a little bit different when you're in an ensemble and you have to play with these other members and play within the rhythm that's set out by your rhythm section and try to blend with your partner. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's really lovely to play with Marsh and do these harmonies, you know, the melodic harmonies, and it's very fun, but it really takes...
He's a master at that. He's
it
very,
takes
very good
working
at
on your ear and working on your ability to create spontaneously for a while.
And so when was it that the Marsha Foreman, you could say, it all sort of came together for the Marsha Foreman Band?
Probably when we started playing at Twigs.
Around 2004?
With Mike Stewart and Dan Colson, Floyd and me. We played down at the El Cortez.
Played once a week for a year.
For a year.
Had this great gig once a week for a year. And that was really the start.
Okay. Okay. And were you calling yourselves the Marsha Foreman Band at the time?
Not officially, but towards the end of that, our CD came out, which we did call the Marsha Foreman Band.
Okay.
So that's where the name started.
Yeah.
Okay. So with the band, listen to your CD. You've got some pretty interesting arrangements. Intros and
yes,
things.
Yes.
So
my teacher at the time, Burke McKelvey, who is now in Berklee School of Music, he's teaching there. He plays the bass, saxophone, and keyboards on that, and he's an integral part of that CD.
Mm-hmm.
We had,
and so he came. He was
my teacher at the time,
right? And he chose the arrangements, or how did you choose the arrangements for the tunes?
No, the arrangements really
just came to us.
We came out of the Twigs gig and other gigs that we were doing at that point.
So these are just kind of spontaneous things where you just...
Mm-hmm. Fairly spontaneous.
Yeah, and then you just wound up doing them over and over and over again, and then they just turned into your arrangements.
Right.
That's it.
You know, generally, we were playing kind of a traditional jazz arrangement where we would do the head and the solo instruments would have their time for a solo, and we'd come up with various hooks and things, but it's not...
And so, Marsha, do you choose the tunes, or do you both choose the tunes?
We all do. Everybody in the band.
Everyone brings tunes in.
Yeah. Like Straight No Spider, it's a takeoff on the Itsy Bitsy Spider, and then we go into Straight No Chaser by Thelonious Monk. So it's like two different genres put together. It's pretty cool. Okay. I don't know where that. I just thought of that. So let's try that.
Yeah, is there anything that you could tell us that makes the Marsha Foreman Band set apart in a certain way? I mean,
we have a great time. We all just the members just cook.
If you're telling me, oh, come see the Marsha Foreman Band, why?
I think. Personality comes out. I think we have a great time. We're not, there are some amazing masters in San Diego, masters of jazz that are kind of in the stratosphere of their ability to play this genre, which is, you could take so far. And we just enjoy, we're like on the edge looking into this.
We aren't bad.
We're not bad. I'm not saying we're bad.
No, I think
we're all friends up there on stage, and we're all really trying to support this music and give something that people enjoy. And I think...
And do you have anything to add to that, Marsha?
And play songs that people enjoy. We just want to.
Is that how you choose the tunes? It's just
people,
figure that.
Yeah.
If we enjoy them, hopefully that comes
they'll
across.
They'll enjoy it. Exactly.
So what's going on now? What's coming up next, huh? That's what I want to know.
You have the Marsha Foreman Band, and you're still playing with Raggle Taggle.
I am.
But you're also with 3 Degrees Off Center.
I am.
And that is, you've been with them for...
Officially, about a year and a half ago, I played a show with them, and we really hit it off. They were actually a band called A Shadow's Edge at that point, and they decided to go through a change and invited me to join the band. So it's now been a year ago, November, I think, we started practicing together. And it's just an incredible group of people. They're all very creative, very, very powerful in what they're doing. And I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
And then I'm playing with my band on Sunday mornings. Brian Whalen and Jeremy Eichem and I play jazz at The Big Kitchen, in front of the Big Kitchen.
How long have you been doing that?
It'll be 2 years in April, I think.
We live in South Park. It's this beautiful community, a very creative community. There's a lot of music and things happening. You know, it feels very vibrant right now. And we've been very lucky to be involved in the community and playing community events, playing some of the local summer concert series. There's a jazz festival that happens in South Park every summer, the South Park Jazz Festival that we've been involved
from
the beginning.
The Old House Fair. There we are. Yeah.
The North Park Spring Festival. We played in that last year.
Ray at Night.
Walkabouts. Marsha always says she likes to keep within a 2 mile radius of home. And 2 mile radius from our house, there is a lot going on.
Yeah,
and so the Marsha Forman Band is a community band that is in a good place to be.
Great.
Liz Abbott spoke up and asked one more question.
I was going to bring up, your family life. You're both musicians and you have a daughter who plays the violin. Do you ever play together at home?
We do.
You do. How does that happen? Hey, let's go play something.
We had a party the other day and... Stella and Floyd.
Stella's your daughter.
Stella's my daughter.
Our daughter.
Our daughter. Hello. Sorry.
17 years ago.
Tell your husband it's your.
She doesn't play the saxophone. She plays a violin. I'm okay with that.
And now, when was it that Stella?
Fourth grade.
So everybody starts playing an instrument. In the fourth grade.
Started taking from Loie Flood. She's still taking from Loie Flood. And now she goes to School of Creative and Performing Arts with Tamara Page as her conductor. And she teaches her orchestra and jazz band. Stella's doing that. And she's in the Young Artist Symphony.
She works more than we do.
She does. She's just...
She mentioned this party we had. We had a little soiree at home, holiday party. And there are, of course, a number of musicians there and got up and did some Christmas carols and just enjoying the evening. And at the end, Stella and I got up with our violins and she just started to...
improvise.
To play a passage. And I joined in. And... it was magical. It's like we hit another level of we were communicating and playing this just magic music and music from the heart.
Marsha, Floyd, thank you very much. This has been very enjoyable.
Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome.
And thanks to everybody else.
And on behalf of the San Diego Troubadour Magazine and Berkeley Sound, thanks to all of you for listening today. We really appreciate you guys tuning in and checking out what's going on in San Diego music. See you down the road. Bye.
The Troubadour Tapes.
1, 2, 3. 2 and 3.
Berkeley.
Berkeley Sound.
If I can talk.
Berkeley.
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 BerkeleySound.com.
Berkeley Sound.